Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris Perry. Maybe you know him from Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
But no matter how much I accumulate, there's still one thing I just don't have.
Your own country?
I don't have you, Michelle. Will you dance with me?
Only if Romy can dance with us.
Sure.
Or the James Bond flick, GoldenEye.
I can do it! I can break her codes.
Then get on with it!
And who can forget the cult favorite, Josie and the Pussycats?
Play this. It's the new single from Du Jour. Recorded just a few days ago before the disappearance. I'd really like to test the reaction.
Alan Cumming is a Scottish-American actor, Tony Award winner, and now the author of a new memoir, Baggage, Tales from a Fully Packed Life. I sat down with Alan to talk about his new memoir and how just a little bit of debauchery is all part of the fun in life.
It sort of begins with me saying that I was a little worried about the great reaction to my first memoir, in that I was very excited about the way that I inspired people to deal with their own trauma and abuse in their own lives and or to confront certain people in their lives. That was great. But the thing I didn't like was the way it was sort of suggested that it was all wrapped up, that I was now fixed, I'd overcome something. And I just really, this book's much more of a lighter book. It's more about my showbiz fun life. But also at the same time, running parallel to that is this thing that actually, you know, your trauma doesn't go away. It's still, you still carry it with you. You just learn to manage it better and you make it you make it work for you. But it's not something that goes, and it's not something you triumph over, and it's not something that has closure.
I so appreciate a bit of a pushback against the happy ending, especially when your life has not yet ended. This is signaled in certain ways by beginning in the preface with Macbeth. So it's Shakespeare calls memory the warder of the brain, right?
Yes, I talk about memory being this really fascinating thing, because when you write a memoir, you obviously have to sort of remember things, but also, you know, you have to sort of, I did anyway, sort of research myself, because I just couldn't remember lots of things. And it's fascinating when you go back and you look at things and you realize your memory is wrong, or not wrong necessarily, but it has grown with time or has changed with time. That to me is really fascinating. And I think about, you know, memory is actually something to me now in the future that you're arriving at, and it's like something to look forward to rather than something behind you. But I think it's interesting that Lady Macbeth says that as she's trying to get her husband to murder their house guest. So it's not exactly a great reference point in terms of decency and niceness. But I actually think of memory in a very different way now, having written these books.
Can we talk about 1997, the year that you had fun?
Yes. It was really Stanley Kubrick's fault, actually. I was waiting to do the little part I did in Eyes Wide Shut. And I'd had a big year the year before. I made a couple of big films, and then I had a relationship that broke up. And I just thought, you know, it'd be quite nice to have some time off. So I just had this really fun time. I went dancing and I had lots of sex with people. And I just had a really debauched, but fun debauched time. And there was a kind of a limit to it, because I knew it was going to end, or I was going to have to go back to work. And I'd always just sort of worked and worked and worked and worked. And I just really let go. I let rip.
I'm going to test this to see if it is in fact true. What is the favorite movie that you've worked on?
I like the way you're leading me to my anecdotes in my book here, as though it's a random question. I mean, I always say Spice World, because I really try and make a point in the book of saying, to me, it's the experience you have doing something that is much more important than the end product. I've had great success with various things, and some of them I've actually hated. I've had miserable experiences doing them. I've also had really great experiences on films, and they've turned out to be like really terrible. And so the sort of epitome of that was this Spice Girls film. It was 1997. I was back in London for the summer. I was dotting about with these five girls who were at the sort of height of this incredible fame. But it was about positivity and great messages. And it was before it all sort of went horribly wrong and we all got jaded with them and they were on every, you know, blooming packet of chips that you could imagine. And it was just a really magical time. And I just loved being in that film. And it was, you know, I really liked that film. I remember it as such a magical summer and hilarious things happened. I wore a chest wig. And the thing was, when you have any sort of wig or anything, you always have to go back at lunch into the makeup thing to get it altered and thingied. So I would just say to them, no, I'm not going to take it off today. And I would shut the door and I would have one. I would take it off immediately. And I would just stick it back on myself. And so in the course of the film, my chest wig changes throughout the because I just put it back
on. You wouldn't let the professionals manage it.
I wouldn't let them do it because it meant like 10 minutes less nap. And so I just shoved it back on myself and thought, oh, it'd be fine.
I just want to end where you begin. And that's with the dedication for my granny, who made me realize it was okay to be different. Can you tell us a bit about your granny?
So she, to me, was this magical person, a bit of an Auntie Mame, but in a sort of a, she wasn't sort of, you know, she didn't take me on all these great trips around the world or anything, but she just sort of made me feel good about myself. And the very last thing she ever said to me was, I had blonde hair and I was at her house and she was very frail. She'd had a heart attack and we were all sort of gathered at her house because it was my uncle's birthday and she couldn't come because she was too unwell. But my uncle was like, oh, you know, what's this, Alan? Another weird haircut. You know, kind of ribbing me. And my granny sort of piped up and she went, well, I like it. I like Alan's blonde hair. And if I was young again, I'd be a freak like Alan too. And I said, oh, thanks, granny. So, yeah, I mean, she encouraged me to wave my freak flag. And I've been waving it ever since.
I love that. It also suggests to me, undoubtedly, that that you as grandchild also released something in her, some knowledge of herself, which is really beautiful about the gifts we give up and down the generations.
Yeah, it was a lovely relationship. And also, you know, that it continues. I realize as I get older how much she inspired me. And also how, you know, I was surrounded by really strong women, my mother and my granny. And the older I get, I realize how important that was to me, that I had very toxic male influences in my life, but really positive, strong, nurturing female ones. Go figure.
Alan Cumming is actor and author of Baggage, Tales from a Fully Packed Life. Alan, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you. It's lovely to talk to you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.